Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong profitable impact on your business.
Hello, everybody. This is Brad Zales, and I am the guest today. And
I'm here.
I believe Denise is coming on right now.
I saw you logging in, and it wouldn't let me in, and I kept saying, "But it's my show." I went full girl. I was like, "No." It was totally embarrassing.
Welcome to our show.
Yeah. Thank you for picking up. I was like, I'm emailing you. I'm Facebooking you. I'm like, I'm here. But anyway, we are here, and Brad, thank you.
You're welcome.
I was so relieved to hear your voice. But everybody, good morning and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and my co-host today is Brad Zales. And our mission is to bring you the most interesting entrepreneurs and business people that I can find. And these are people who are freely sharing their wisdom, their business tips, their advice, and they're wonderful about it. They don't hold back. They share their story, warts and all, and we get some great, great interviews by talking with just wonderful entrepreneurs. And today, as you know, I have the great honor of welcoming back, Brad, take over, I'm done, welcoming back to the program for the third time global business advisor and the foremost authority on generational issues and workforce culture strategies, Brad Zales. Now, the first time Brad was here on Your Partner in Success was back in April, and he explained why millennials act the way they do. And if you haven't listened to it, it was such an eye-opening podcast that I decided that I had to bring Brad back for part two. Now, in the second part, Brad asked if baby boomers had been betrayed, and that's a big word. It's a big, big topic. And he explained that the economic impact of inflation and government on our economic future kind of, you know, goes to that point. Have they been betrayed? So as millennials rise into positions of power, scary thought for a lot of us, I know, baby boomers will be facing poverty in their old age. And he touched on the sandwiched boomers, millennials rising, Gen X being ignored, and how boomers will have to start a business and create their own brand online. And this is in the show notes, but I hope everybody Googled the brand called You. And you can find links to those interviews in the show notes, and you can also find us in iTunes. So today, Brad was gracious to come back, and gracious enough to come back, and he's going to answer. He's laughing. It's his show. I don't know why I'm even here. He's going to answer a few more questions about millennials and where boomers fit in, and he's going to answer the bigger question. So now that we know what's about to happen, what in the heck do we do about it? Brad, you have no idea how happy I am to hear you here today.
Good. I hope no one has been left traumatized by our last two episodes.
I was, to be honest with you. That second one, well, remember I told you the first one, I mean, there were some big, big, oh, moments for me.
Right.
And I admitted in the show to not really understanding or frankly even liking millennials. Now,
yeah.
Honestly, now I look at them differently. And remind me to tell you about my Albertsons foray, my grocery store.
Right.
This poor kid, normally, if I hadn't spoken with you, I would have been just wanting to hit him about the head and shoulders.
Right.
As it was, and it's another, we'll talk about it later, but as it was, I stood back and I watched him and I thought, oh, you poor little schmuck. I hope you pull your head and your thumbs out of your butt one day soon, but we will go into that. So,
oh yeah,
it was interesting, but honestly, you saved his life. That's the best
way. You're gonna go commando on him, huh?
I was ready to run into him with a shopping cart.
Dump a quart of milk on his head.
Poor thing, poor little guy. But anyway, so let's kind of recap, because we had a lot to talk about the last two, so I was traumatized, yes, but I think
good.
I'm better now.
Good.
So if you don't mind, recap what we've been talking about.
Sure. I want everybody to realize, you know, as baby boomers, and I'm one of them, and so is Denise, we were taught there's a lot of rules. And we were told, you know, you have to obey the authority figure, the C-level executive, and your career takes time. It takes effort. You have to study hard or prove that you are working hard. And then a review board, usually, or an authoritarian figure, would help you move forward. And we did that in school, and we did that in our businesses and things like that. So now we are supposed to be the people in charge telling the young people what to do. And what happened is you have these mini-me's growing up around us that weren't raised at all like us. And like I said in our last couple of podcasts, I was doing a workshop down in Texas for the people who work for the retired teachers administration down there. And these are people who manage the retirement accounts and teachers' things that they complain about and things like this. So they're listening. And at the end of like 3 hours, Denise, this one Gen Xer actually said, you know, why aren't they trying to be successful like us? You know, because Gen X did have the same training as boomers plus the technology. So this Gen Xer says, why are we changing everything for millennials? You know, why aren't they more successful? And I said, wait a minute. You guys raised millennials, basically, boomers did, you removed everything that made us boomers successful. You know, we were forced to get up early. We were paddled. We had a fear of authority. We had to work hard to prove ourselves. And we had to stay there, be stable, show that we were loyal, and then we'd move ahead. You removed all of that training when you raised millennials, and now you expect them to be successful and obey the rules like we did. It ain't going to happen. They're not going to change. And that is the mission I have to tell boomers. They're not going to change. They're not going to turn around one day and wake up and say, you know, I could have done this differently, or my dad was right, or whatever, because it's a brave new world. And the great thing about millennials, this is going to scare the hell out of everybody, they're going to bring the human side back into our world, because if you don't listen to millennials as a group, you don't obey what they say, and governments don't listen to what they have to say, and all these other things, guess what's going to happen? They turn their back on entire business sectors. They just turn around and leave. They don't care.
I know we talked about that. Now, for the sake of just a better description, what is a millennial? I had a great conversation with the business manager at my dentist's office the other day, and she's raising a 13-year-old. And right. I was telling her about your podcast, and she's like, oh, my gosh, so we're in her office. You know, I should have been in and out, paid my bill. Hour and a half later, I left, and she hugged me. She's like, thank you. So she's listening to your podcast. But
good.
Explain to people what a millennial is. I mean, there's a lot of terms
sure.
that we're throwing around here. Baby boomers, we all know what a baby boomer is. But
right.
millennials, generation, you know, kind of just walk us through that.
Sure. Anybody born after 1977 is considered a Generation Y person. And what does that mean is they were raised with technology. Chances are that both parents were working. They were exposed to video games and toys that spoke to them and interacted with them, like Speak and Spell. And a new idea came into the household, child-centric parenting. And the hierarchy, believe it or not, was flattened inside the household. So mommy and daddy would look at the little kid and go, should mommy and daddy get a divorce, Billy? What do you think? You know, you laugh at these.
I'm not laughing.
Now,
I'm crying.
Yeah, and my father, he's the first generation of Hungarian immigrant born here in the United States, and when he heard about child-centric parenting, he goes, that's a load of crap, okay? And that's his stamp of approval. And he was buying a new car at the time, an Ambassador Brougham made by AMC Motors, and he pulled me aside and he said, you know something? When you're old enough to buy your own car, you pick the color you want. Until then, shut the hell up. Yeah, and some of you are laughing because your dad's raised you that way, you know, and your mom would look at you and go, wait till your father gets home. We were raised that way, authoritarian. Our parent, you know, in some cases, this would be considered child abuse today. You know, my father said, I am your father. I am not your friend. When I tell you to get out of bed and put your work clothes on, you do it. Maybe when you're 35 years of age, I might find you interesting enough and we can have a beer together and maybe we can be friends if you're not stupid at that age. And he goes, I'm not sure yet. The jury's out. He goes, until then, get to work. And this is how most baby boomers were raised. You had chores to do. You had rules to obey. And this usually is anybody born before 1965 is a baby boomer. And, you know, I don't know if you know this, but we were boomers mostly, for the most part, were raised by traditionalists who went through World War II. And some of you may remember this, but right around the 1950s, the late 50s, this idea, this new word came into the vocabulary called a teenager. Before that, we didn't have a teenager. That's a marketing term that was invented because for the first time, when you hit the teen years, you were now going to high school. Okay, there was no such thing. You know, the public school system that we have today really started right after World War II. And we had an industrialized nation that had to get ready and prepare for becoming a superpower, a worldwide country now that dominated the world. So we all started going to public school. And what public school did is it indoctrinated us into the system that we all learned very well, which is you study hard, keep your mouth shut, sit down, shut up, and listen was what we heard all the time. You had to study, pass the tests, or work very hard, and then an authority figure would let you move forward. And this is linear, it takes time, and it takes obedience to the rules. So this idea of a teenager was now this idea. It's a marketing term that really describes buying power. That's what it is. That's what all these terms are to name any generation. Boomers, teenagers, all this stuff, it really puts us in a box of how we purchase, behave, and do certain things. Teenager in the 50s meant you were now had a job, you were saving to buy a car, you were getting ready to graduate from high school, and chances are you were driving to get to the drive-in diner to get a burger, fries, and a Coca-Cola or a milkshake. And before that, teenagers weren't separated from their families like that. They weren't independent before that. If you remember, majority of Americans up until World War II, before that, our economy was considered a third world economy. That doesn't mean we were a third world country. It means we were a third world economy, meaning we were unstable. We were the manufacturing floor of the whole world. That's why we had such a burgeoning middle class, because you know we were making the goods for the rest of the world. And we had electricity, and we had all this stuff. But the majority of the United States, after World War I, was farmland. Okay? And we didn't really have highways running from one end to the other. It was after World War II we became a stable, modern economy.
I didn't realize that. This is a fascinating history lesson. I didn't know that teenagers was a marketing term. Now I'm like, well, duh. Of course.
Well, now they've invented tweens. Do you know what a tween is?
Well, yeah, that's the 12. Those are the
12-year-olds. I would 11 and 12-year-olds.
I would say prepubescent, but that's no longer the case anymore, is it?
Right, and
so,
now they have all
these are the young ones.
Right, now they have all this stuff for tweens and teenagers. So, the reason I'm bringing this up is there's baby boomers, which were taught the linear way of doing things. We save for retirement. We have affluence. We pay for homes. We buy things that have meaning in our lives. Gen X is a little more cynical, and they were born between 1965 and 1976. Anybody who's in their 40s is Gen X right now. And they were taught to be a little bit cynical because they're the first latchkey kids. They grew up on bands that were part of the grunge movement, which were telling the rest of the world off and became cynical about the way the world was being run. So you see bands like Pearl Jam and Red Hot Chili Peppers, and this defined this generation. It was a reflection of their angst, They grew up with movies like Goonies and John Hughes movies like 16 Candles, and where the kind of the loser became the hero. You see, before the late 60s and the early 70s, or the late 70s into the 80s, before that, movies were usually about the hero winning the day, the cowboy, the lone cowboy gunning down. Right, John Wayne.
Yeah.
But right around the late 70s, early 80s, we had this movement that started to take place where you had, what was the movie? The Breakfast Club. That's the iconic movie that really sets the tone for what I'm talking about. The losers, the ones who got in trouble and were in detention, listen to the end of that movie where he finally writes the piece they're supposed to write, and they say, "You look at us like we're losers." And we're not. So we're not going to turn in our homework. We're just going to be who we are. And now, for the first time in movies and television, the anti-hero became the hero. The weirdo, the outcast, the person who didn't fit in was now more interesting than previous generations. So now we have a generation that was raised on don't judge the outsider, don't judge the weirdo, the loser, the person who doesn't fit in. They are just as accepted into society as everybody else. So if you notice right now, now that you know these are marketing terms and these are buying cycles, you can see now what Gen X puts into their value pot. They have a little bit of boomer in there, but they're cynical. They know the technology, but they've been obedient and loyal to every company they've joined because they were taught that. So they wore the tie, they wore the suit, they showed up on time, they paid their dues, they did everything, they're ready for management positions, and the boomers are stepping over them to shake the hands of millennials because they're petrified of millennials. They make no sense.
Why?
They don't fit into the paradigm we've been taught. So they're freaking out. What do you mean you're leaving?
They're very techie, and that's important these days. I mean, you have to have technical skills.
Yes. So the three big things, and I'll just lay them out real quick and we'll move on, but from 1977 on, everybody was raised on Star Wars and science fiction in their movies, and their toys showed that reality because their toys could now interact with them, and they had video games. Those two things were the biggest thing that got into the brains and behavior of everybody born after 1977. And I'm not talking about Ms. Pac-Man in 1977. I'm talking about 1984 when we started to get Nintendo and Sony PlayStations into the house and having these multi-layer, multi-level playing games. It took years to master. And what this did is it changed the brains and the behavior of anybody born who played with those things. And now from that moment on, people would make mistakes instead of reading directions. They would just jump in and make mistakes and learn as they went. They wouldn't look to authority figures. They looked to peers in the video game to solve the problems. Everything was intuitive. Rules, politics, everything was learned by making mistakes, pressing against the wall, being a maverick, being a pushing through, doing whatever you feel like doing to learn the game. Instead of watching a movie on TV, they were immersed in video games. So it became a first-person ideology to them. They were Bruce Willis in their own movie. And so that made them have higher self-esteem. And then the third piece of this puzzle was child-centric parenting, child-centric teaching, which also said that peers, any adult around you is a peer, your friend, your mentor, somebody you look to for answers but you don't look up to.
I'm with your dad on this one.
Right. And so what happened is when these young people, anybody who's about 37 years of age down to about 21 right now, doesn't see you as a boomer who has 30 years of experience or more. They see you as a mentor, somebody they should just walk up to and talk to. And if you don't open your mouth with the right sentences and you judge them harshly, they won't listen to you. They will ignore you.
Well, I understand that. I mean, we're all touchy anyway, or I am. I mean, I say we are, I am. But the thing is, I mean, I think we all have that quality anyway.
Yes.
If I'm understanding correctly, they just carry it to a much further extreme than most of us do.
They act on it. Boomers, how many boomers listening your boss told you off and you sat there and you kept your mouth shut and you listened and you went back to work and you did what you did. How many of you listening?
I didn't. I talked back.
You were rare. But how many of you lost your retirement savings? Or the guy who you hired to invest your money lost it and you got angry, you tried to find a lawyer and it didn't work out and you just went right back to work and you started saving and doing exactly the same habits you did before? The millennial won't tolerate this. They will leave. They will walk away. I had a friend call me up when I first started doing this work, Joel. He called me up and he said, "Hey, my nephew, who just graduated from college, he started this job, and he's been there 2 weeks. And my sister was just so excited. He got this job and he's making like $80,000-$90,000, and he quit last week after 2 weeks of being there." I said, "Really? Why?" He didn't like the way his boss spoke to him. That's why he quit. Now, anybody listening, your head is, the gears in your head are probably like going, "What?" And you may see it as spoiled behavior. You may see it as entitled behavior. You may see it as a lot of these things. But I want you to know, you raised them to be this way. So now you have to figure out how to understand this behavior because it's not going away. You have to live with it.
So,
and I know that's a rough one.
It's
scary. That's a little harsh. That's a little tough love from your Uncle Brad. That doesn't mean you let them just do whatever they want and throw their poop on the wall and do whatever. Sometimes you have to pull them aside and say, "Hey, you've crossed the line here." And I had a friend who, that just happened to her. She hired a millennial to do some design work, and the millennial wind up, she was tired of working with her, and she told her off. And the woman just started to get furious, and she called me up, and she's been working with me for 2 years, and she finally got the real taste, the real deal. And she's like, "Now I know why you're doing what you're doing."
It's important work.
Yes.
Well, they are very different from, look, I watch some of these kids. And I'll be honest with you, I'm an introvert. I don't get out of the house much. That is by design. I'm happiest all by myself doing my own thing. But when I do get out, I'm very observant. I'm a people watcher. And I love to watch what everybody's doing and, you know, and how they're acting. And since having these conversations with you, I've been much more interested in millennials or, you know, just younger kids.
Right.
To see how they act or interact, and I've got to be honest with you, Brad, some of them are just like lost balls in the high grass.
Yes. And
it's really sad.
You're going to see this, and I want everybody, you start to pay attention to this. You can see the sharp millennial that works for you or works around you, and you go, "Wow, what a breath of fresh air. This kid's amazing." But you see him as mini-me. He's not, or she's not. They don't think like you. They don't have their father voice in the back of their head saying, "You're a girl, you can't do that," or "You're limited," and this or that. They don't have any of those things in their head. They don't even have rules in their head. So now you're sitting there thinking,
that's scary.
Yeah.
That is scary to me.
Right. And they're divided into two camps, by the way. You have the millennial that has dropped out of high school, dropped out of school, period, doesn't want to have anything to do with anybody, lives in their parents' basement, and is just not really engaged, not getting a job, not doing anything. And we talked about this in the previous podcast, the sandwiched boomer, the boomer who has paid their mortgage, but now they have to take care of their aging parents, and they're maybe living in the same house or live down the road, while their millennial or Gen Y young adult is living with them, or, and this is the side that people don't look at, the invisible influencer, and that is most millennials are probably buying homes because their parents gave them the down payment to get them out of the house. Now, the statistics are out there that says that millennials are not living at home, and they say it's only 18% that are living at home, and I don't believe that at all, number
no,
one.
I don't either.
And I don't look down at millennials for doing this because they weren't really taught to, at 21, you're going to move out, right? You know, that's what my dad told me. You know, you need to move out now. By the time, if you're still at home at 24, I'm going to kick your butt. You know, that was his attitude.
Mm-hmm.
So
us
boomer,
too. It was 18. Yeah. We had to be out by 18, and rightfully so.
Yeah,
I mean,
my father,
when we were done
with
school, we were gone.
My dad threatened me with physical. Yeah, I'm going to kick your butt, and he meant it. Now, millennials weren't taught that way. They were taught, "Hey, you stick around here, buddy, as long as you want." You know. So now we have millennials living at home. And I don't want you to judge this. I want you to just look at it. Millennials, if you're listening, you know, it's like, I don't judge you for any of this. This is what you were talking
right.
to. Yeah,
right.
You can't be angry at your progeny when this is what you taught them to do. You taught them to only work on stuff you're passionate about. So they're not going to mow the lawn. They're going to build websites for the summer. A lot of people were complaining, you know, 10, 15 years ago, why aren't these kids, you know, mowing the lawn and cutting grass like my generation did? It's like, well, because they can make $20,000 over the summer by building 5 websites.
True. Let me tell you something. I'm trying to find somebody to do some yard work right now. It is not easy.
Find a boomer.
I'm going to have to.
Actually, we have a young man here. We were so shocked. He's a millennial. He started his own yard business. And part of the reason was is he probably didn't have any choices and probably couldn't afford to go to college. But he's well-read, and he does our lawn. And the reason he does the lawn is I don't have time anymore to do the lawn. And I love yard work. But for $30, $35 once every couple of weeks, he does cuts the grass and trims the hedges. That's a bargain.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know, and then for $150, he gets the lawn ready for the spring. I mean, I can't, you know, I can't argue with that price. And he's bought equipment and everything. So look around you. There are millennials out there who are sharp, who want to kick some butt and do respect you, but you can't stand there with this attitude like, you know, back in my day, you know, we did things this way. You can't look down like we were taught to do. You know, it's almost like the military. You know, if I suffered, you have to suffer. And my father had some of that attitude. As much as I've achieved, the books I've written, took a company public on Wall Street, on NASDAQ, my father still looked at me as this smart-ass kid, pardon my French, but and I was a punk at 40. My father still considered me. I didn't know anything yet. You know, back years ago. And that's what we were taught, that hierarchy.
Right. Well, what do we do, Brad? I mean, what I really wanted to talk with you about, too, is the emotional IQ of the different generations, because when I'm out and about, I watch.
Right.
And I love to watch how people are interacting or not interacting.
Right.
You know, I love to watch how people are just so darned oblivious that
right.
you could walk up, smack them in the back of the head with an axe and walk off. They wouldn't even know you'd been there.
Right.
It's amazing to me to see how people just kind of wander through life, and then other people are just, look, I'm in here with a list. I'm going to get this. I'm going to smile
yep.
and make nice, but I'm out the door in 5 minutes. It's
mm-hmm.
astonishing, but I'm seeing, my point for saying that is that I'm seeing different behaviors in different generations.
Right.
And I'm also seeing how much, we can call it emotional IQ, we can call it plain old-fashioned common sense, but my observation to date is that very young people, millennials, younger, just don't have much common sense. Am I just dead wrong?
No, you have to realize they weren't taught. My father used to hit me in the back of the head and say, use your common sense, you know, think before you act, do all these other things. Millennials, Generation Y, millennials have actually been taught differently. And this is what happens when you do certain things, when you raise a child, you don't expect anything of them. And when you don't expect anything of them, they don't use their brain. How many of you listening today were sent to your room and your parents said, you stay in that room until you figure it out? And you didn't have a television in that room. You didn't have a game station in that room. You didn't have anything but a light, your books, and maybe a deck of cards. And you had to sit there and think. And figure out
mostly
what you
think
did
about
wrong.
How to get your way out of it.
Right.
Not
and
what you
were taught.
Wrong, how to talk your way out of it. But,
right. And my
know,
father.
Coping skills.
My parents' favorite phrase was, who the heck do you think you are? The center of the universe? There's other people in this house, bucko. But now, You have a new generation that's been raised. You go, all right, you go to your, you have a time out there, buddy. You go to your room and you think about what you did. And the kid goes in and turns on his PlayStation and starts playing a video game.
Right. Right.
Comes out and negotiates and says, yes, mommy, I was bad. But they really don't take that in. See, we have a whole bunch of child psychologists that changed the curriculum in the school system and said there's no right or wrong. You can't judge a child because they have to be forgiven for what they do because they're children. But there's no curriculum in there to tell them what's right and wrong by the time it's needed. When they're older and they need to know what is right and wrong and what they should do or the ramifications of their behavior. That's just not in there. And that's why you have to mentor the heck out of millennials a lot of times. The sharp ones get it. But at the same time, my father used to say, there are three things here that I'm going to teach you. You have to figure out the other two. And a millennial will tell you, well, you didn't tell me what the other two were, so I don't care if I make a mistake. You didn't tell me not to do that. Does that sound familiar?
Yeah. It does. So I've heard you talk about two-way mentorships, and you just mentioned mentorship again. How does that work? How do you even approach something like this?
Well, the two-way mentorship is very important. You cannot sit there and say to yourself, I am so awesome because I invented Teflon back in the 70s, and you need to listen to me because of that. A lot of things have changed dramatically. From the boardroom to the mailroom, everything has shifted. There might be an app on your phone that will replace your whole business. How are you going to discover that if you're standing up there in the boardroom saying, oh, we're so awesome? You got to come down from Mount Olympus a little bit and start listening to and finding your best and brightest millennials, pull them aside, and start sitting in a group situation over coffee or breakfast. Pick two or three and start listening to them. Pick the ones that are sharp and pick a couple of the ones you think might be a little strange or weird and start listening to what they're looking at, how they're using their phones for business, how they're interacting, what they're developing, and think and listen and process. And whatever they bring to the table, see how you can use that for business. But at the same time, remember, millennials are dying for mentors that get them. You know, they really
want. Are they really?
Oh, yeah, they're dying for it. The mentor they can't stand is the one who says, you're a kid, you don't know squat.
Right. Your dad can get by with that, but you can't.
Right. And I have a young man right now who's I'm part of a mastermind group that I'm working with, and he basically, he's using drones to sell real estate. And his father's in the same business, and his father, although he has surpassed his father financially at 20-something years of age, his father still just looks down at him that he's the child in this pyramid, this career path pyramid. And the reality is you now have a 40-something or 50-something that took 30 years to get into a particular position that worked hard to do that. You may be shocked to know that the millennial has all those skills already and wants to fit into that slot right away because they came already using computer skills. They didn't have to learn them late in life. And so what happens is they just don't have the maturity, the emotional maturity, to have the patience to stay there for 10 years to work on their career. And part of it is things are moving much faster. We have technology and apps right now that we didn't have 5 years ago, 10 years ago. You don't know the impact of those things. These young people do. And you've got to find out about it by being a secret agent for your own business. For your own peace of mind, you got to start listening to them because this is such a different world. We don't need stores anymore to buy things at all.
Oh, no.
They live in that world.
Mm-hmm.
Right. They live in that world. You do not. And a boomer might be tearing their hair out like, well, why isn't anybody coming to my bookstore?
Right.
You know, I had a manager at a Barnes & Noble here come running up to me. God, you wouldn't believe all the deals I got on Amazon last night. And he named off all the stuff, and I just looked at him and said, you're the manager here. You get a discount, and you still have to go to Amazon. And he goes, shh, quiet. Don't tell anybody. You know, and that's what's happening.
Okay, but Brad, when you're talking about, you know, somebody's been in a position like that, you know, he's been in his real estate position, he's successful, he's worked hard at it, you know, he's displayed the emotional maturity to stick with it and raise his family and, you know, do all the things that adults are supposed to do. I guess my question here is, what is the emotional impact? You know, not just the kind of, okay, I have to stop and listen to these guys, but, you know, there has to be a huge resistance to watching these kids come along and just whip it out and go with it
right.
after you spent 10, 20, 30 years. So I would think, just guessing, that there's got to be a huge emotional toll on people
yeah.
who are in this position, baby boomers and anybody else. There's got to be a massive amount of hidden
yeah.
or
subdued
jealousy going on, don't you think?
Oh, yes. It's jealousy. That's one thing. There's another side to this, too. Boomers were taught that by the time you're 40 and 50, you should be managing. You should be running something. You should be telling these kids what to do. And what has happened is we were taught this. This is no longer true. But if your boss was younger than you, you screwed up somehow. So there's
oh.
a huge shame. There's a huge shame factor in a lot of baby boomers right now because their boss is now 30 and they're 55 and there's no structure anymore. So they don't know where they fit in the organization. Are they in charge? And, you know, their salary and their title were part of, it's just like grade school. If you got an A and you were on the honor society, you were somebody. Well, guess what? Now, if you have a salary and a position, you used to get an office. That meant you were somebody and you were in charge and they should listen. Well, now there are no offices. There are no titles. You're just getting paid to do a job. So where does that put you in the organization? And if you don't know where you fit in within the organization, you're going to be kind of feeling kind of like you are a loser, like you screwed up somehow, like you didn't do things right. I want you to take all that thinking, because that's old programming, I want you to let it go.
So what does that do when you have this old programming and you have this low-level sense of dread going on every day that you walk into work, and you have this misery and jealousy going on? Sounds like a very potent mix for a big boom.
Yep.
So how do you, as a boomer, I mean, how do you stand back and go, okay, they're here, I have to deal with it. What can
yeah.
I do to say, okay, you know, I'm going to welcome you into my business world. You're not coming to my house for a beer. I don't like you that much. But, you know, I need to learn to work with you. Are there any steps that people can, kind of like you, I mean, listen, I listen to you, and now I, honest to God, am looking at these kids very differently.
Right.
I mean,
I used to be the same way. I used to get enraged. I'd say, well, this is what changed them, but these damn kids today. And my wife says, you know,
oh, yeah.
if you're going to be the millennial expert, you can't be complaining about this. And I go, all
right,
you're right. I don't like what you just said, but you're right, and I love you dearly. My wife lays down the law, and I go, you know,
yes,
something,
dear.
Woman, you're right. You know, so I can't argue with her. And her logic is, you know, impeccable. And she
sounds
was right.
Like it. Right.
Yeah, so I want everybody to do kind of the same. Learn from my mistakes. Hello. And start to look at millennials as a valued asset on a team of commandos. You wouldn't judge a commando team by age or experience. I mean, you would if you're in Vietnam or some war zone. You'd say, well, that guy needs to get up to speed. But you would look at his skill set first, and that's the key. You can't look at age as the criteria anymore for advancement or placement. What it is now, and we have this happening right now in the work field, you have 50-somethings going for the exact same job as a 20-something. So the age must be taken out of the paradigm, and you can't feel insecure about age either. That's the other side of the coin. I take the martial arts, and I'm in the dojo with 20-somethings fighting alongside. And, yeah, I have to use tricks to keep up. But, you know, we face each other as equals, and you've earned the right to be in that circle of influence. And that's the key. Let go of the prejudgments. How many of you listening get furious when someone's late, a young person's late?
Drives me crazy.
Right.
It doesn't matter who it is. It drives me. Look, I have a rule. if you have not showed up in 6 minutes, I'm gone. I will
right.
not wait for you. 6 minutes,
right.
that's it. Not five, not seven, six. I don't know why.
Yeah.
I don't know where it came from. But I will leave. You will see my tailpipes. I'm gone.
Yeah. Well, now take a look at this, and I want everybody to really, really step back for a moment. I know it's going to infuriate some of you, and some of you are going to think I'm crazy, but we were looking at this as obedience to the organization. And the organization stopped being loyal to the employee a long time ago. So a lot of people have this attitude like, well, you know, I'll show up when I feel like it. Now, unless your job requires time to be perfect, you know, you work at a watch factory, and therefore a certain amount of watches must get built by a certain amount of time, then unless you're doing that kind of work, you have to let go of time as your criteria for judgment. Because I worked for this company years ago when I first started my career. Their top salesperson, because he lived outside of the city and his commute was horrible, a lot of times he was 10 minutes late. And if anybody has lived in New York City 25, 30 years ago, the subway system was not as reliable as it is today. So you did have to deal with that. Well, at some point he got fired. Top sales guy at this small company got fired. And they didn't see anything wrong with it for being late, because that was the rule. They remember, that's the old-fashioned way of doing business. If you are late enough times, we fire you. If you don't come back from lunch at enough time, we fire you. We didn't put up with certain behavior at all. But there's an old saying that says you don't shoot your prize bull because he poops in the pasture. And that's what he did. They got rid of him. And within 2 years, that company was bankrupt. So you have to ask yourself, what is truly important at the company? And you're right. You don't want to reward bad behavior, but if the guy is going above and beyond the call of duty and was up till 2 o'clock in the morning doing a proposal, brings it in at 8:30 and drops it on your desk at 9 and goes back home to go to bed, I don't think you should fire that person. Okay? You just need to manage their behavior to say, use your big words and basically say, I am very disappointed when you show up late. I would prefer if you were here at 9. But if that person stays till 7, 8 o'clock every night, what do you care if they're 10 minutes late in the morning?
I guess you do have to look at it like that, and that does make sense.
Right.
It's, you know, I think it would be easy to say, look, it's my company, my rules, but there are consequences for every decision that we make. And
yeah.
I think that's where EQ comes in, emotional, you know, intelligence.
Yes, emotional
you have to
intelligence.
Kind of, right, you have to look at, okay, is this a smart thing to do? Yeah, you know, he's not playing by the rules, but here's
right.
sometimes it's good to just take a piece of paper, draw that line
yeah.
down the middle, and
yeah.
the pros and cons, and then make a decision.
If you go to my blog, www.liquidleadership.com, me and Rob Hirschfeld, he's the CEO of Rakken. We have been working on a blog series where we're trying to show management that managing in today's workforce is more like jazz, not like conducting an orchestra. In conducting an orchestra, there's a lot of rules. The conductor controls the performance. The performance is the same every time. Emotionally, it tries to stir people up, but the notes are the same as what Mozart wrote on paper. Now, once in a while, they'll let someone play improv, but that person has to earn the right, and they have to usually have made first chair. And first chair is basically, to a boomer who works in the corporate world, that's like getting the corner office. The first chair violin always sits to the left, the very first chair in front of the audience. And that takes years to gain that chair. And once that chair is gained, guess what? No one else can get that chair till that person dies or gets sick. So the millennial hasn't been taught
brilliant.
This. Yes,
that
the
is
millennial has.
Brilliant.
Thanks. The millennial hasn't been taught any of this, and we call this management free falling. And what happens is the millennial hasn't been taught any of this. The millennial has been raised with the same discipline of learning the musical instrument that they want to play because they're passionate about that instrument. But when they get into the corporate environment, they've been raised on jazz. Jazz means there's a loose structure. You get to play, But there's no real leader. There's just somebody in the corner who oversees the structure and lets you play the way you want to play and helps you, support you. And the only way you're going to get good in the jazz world is if you're allowed to come in and play alongside musicians who are better than you. And guess what? In those kind of environments, leadership is rotational. That's the improv part. Jazz allows you to shine wherever you can shine. And we don't know what the performance is going to look like from day one to day two. It's always customized, and it's always different.
That's got to be impossible for business owners and managers to grasp.
It is impossible because you now have, for the first time, now they need training. I don't want anybody to think I'm completely off my rocker here, because millennials do need training in certain structure. But once they're trained, you don't really need to manage people who love working, because they're not going to work from 9 to 5. They're going to work from 10 to 10, okay? And they're going to take their work home and continue working on it till 2 in the morning. And then on the weekend, they're going to figure out ways to make it even better if you give them the right tools to do it. And that means that you got to throw away this idea of time as a bucket of a moment where you fill in work. You know, and that's how we see time, a lot of us. Time is a bucket, and I have to put a certain amount of work on a pile in that bucket, or I haven't accomplished anything today. And that's really why we get upset when somebody shows up at 10 after 9, and it just drives us nuts, because we were taught the industrial age works from 9 to 5. Okay?
Yeah.
And if you don't show up, you're fired. You just can let go your best asset.
Right, right. And I have to be honest with you, I view time as a man-made construct. I don't pay much attention to it. I do what I want to do when I want to do it. I may be a little millennial-like in that aspect, but when I'm meeting somebody personally, or I'm going to, you know, if I'm going to be there a few minutes early, if they're meeting me, they need to be on time. My personal time is so valuable to me. I have a very low tolerance for tardiness, but I completely understand what you're saying about this.
Yes.
So let's talk really quickly, because this is a big, big story right now. Darn it, we're running out of time again.
Well, we'll go over a little bit.
You got to come back again. Okay, so the CEO of Zappos, Tony Hsieh, he is now advocating a no management whatsoever model called Holacracy. Holacracy. What do you think about that? What is your view? I don't have a view. I haven't studied it yet.
Well, I advocated a results-only work environment model when I won the Arthur Andersen Award for doing such. And all I did was take the model we used in doing event production. And I'm talking full-scale meetings where you come in for a pharmaceutical company or a car company, and you build a set, and you have staging and lighting technicians, you have video artists, you have designers, you have all these people come in, mission-driven, everybody's expected to give 100%, they get that mission done, they clean it up, and they all go home and they take their paychecks with them. That is what I brought in to my company, K2, and I basically told everybody, you are teams. And each team is on a mission. And each mission is driven by deadlines. Got to get it done. I don't care how you get the work done. I want it done on time. And so that required a production manager to just oversee and throw out the deadlines and say, hey, guys, this is due tomorrow. What do you need to get that done? It's all very supportive. It's all very nurturing. And it's more of an adult work environment, because each person is expected to get their work done without being managed or someone standing over their shoulder every day. Holacracy takes out all management. There's no in-between. There's just everybody is equal within the organization, and they're expected to come up with ideas on their own, work within teams that are structured with a singular goal, and all these other things, and it looks like a giant piece of chaos. Okay?
It sounds like a giant piece of chaos, because, look, structure is needed. I don't care what anybody says. There has to be some structure. It can be minimal. It can be massive, whatever it requires, but don't you think there has to be something? You know, somebody has to answer to somebody.
I totally believe.
I looked at this and went, okay, I don't get this.
It's going to scare the hell out of everybody. Because, Let me throw this out of here. Tony Hsieh wouldn't even be able to talk about holacracy unless he had made $1 billion with the structure that he already has in place.
Exactly.
So let's start with that. And this is what
I
admit.
I looked at that and I thought, there's no way you could start a company by just throwing everybody into the big pond and going, have a good time. Let me know when you're done.
Let me ask you this. Do you like to light your cigars with $100 bills? Because if you do, holacracy is for you. Okay? Okay. It's awesome. And I'll tell you what Tony Hsieh did. Tony Hsieh took us the original downtown area of Las Vegas is not where you see the big casinos. I don't know if you know this, but if you go to Las Vegas and you say, I want to go to the Strip, they'll take you to the Bellagio. That's where all the big casinos are and the Pyramid and the MGM Grand and all this. If you tell the cab driver, take me downtown, you are now going to head down into the business district of Las Vegas. And this is where it actually looks like Wildwood, New Jersey used to look back in the 70s. Okay, there's places where they make sandwiches and the grill is outside, you know, and it's like it reminded me. I went down there one night to see what all the hubbub was about. It reminded me of the third Mad Max movie, Beyond Thunderdome. The only thing missing were fire breathers blowing fire into the air. It was a big party. And what it was is Tony Hsieh wanted to develop the downtown and get businesses to come back to Vegas that had nothing to do with the casinos. Great idea. I told a friend of mine they're going to be throwing money at that for a long time because you can't just throw money at something to fix it. I should know, my hometown of Lebanon, Pennsylvania, has been going through economic strife and changes since the 70s when they closed down the Bethlehem Steel and the Lebanon Steel Foundry. So you can't just throw money at a problem. But what Tony Hsieh is hoping is that an idea will come out of this that will generate people's interest, and they will start coming to the downtown to do business more and more and more. And this is kind of the way holacracy works. You keep throwing stuff at the wall until it sticks.
I'm just stunned by this. What is your prediction? What do you think is going to work? I mean, is this going to work for him? I know very little about it, but just my instinct says,
brother. It works amongst millennials because millennials love this stuff. But
really?
He has quietly laid a few people off. Remember, Tony Hsieh took a lot of his money and bought a hotel there and had it renovated. It has a casino in it and everything, and he does this downtown initiative that he's been working on. It's for developing this area. And I think some of this is great, but I want you to know how holacracy can work best. First, you need traditional business structure and a business that's already making money, okay? And that is Zappos. His business, Zappos, is very impressive because when they bring in new employees, you get trained in their unique customer service, which has allowed them to grow faster than any of today's businesses that just are mailing it in. This is why Spiegel's catalog went out of business and is just a website now, because they didn't understand you've got to evolve to your changing customer, okay? Catalogs were starting to bore the hell out of people. So instead of giving superior customer service and shifting their business to what people like, they just kind of let it die out. Columbia Records and Tapes, remember them? They had the model,
yeah.
And then they forgot the technology. Yeah, they were trying to get the subscription-based model where you pay them, $10 a month to buy this or do it. Or every time you ordered, you had to order a certain amount of goods and services from them in order to get out of that contract. And if you didn't order the right stuff, you were in that contract forever, and you could never get out of it. Well, along comes Netflix, and boom, they're out of business. So all these businesses failed to keep pace because they were clinging to the old business model too much. You have to create a holacracy somewhere within your business that allows you to do research and development and try to play around with new ideas and figure out what works. And that's really what holacracy is. It's playtime to find a new model or something that can make money. And by the way, W.L. Gore does this. They don't call it holacracy, but that's basically what it is. It's like, let's play around, DuPont does this as well, 3M, W.L. Gore. They basically have teams that are working on different projects, and you can rotate and pull your desk over and work with a team. If you don't like that team, you move to another team, and you start developing things that you're built to develop. And they've created billion-dollar businesses from one idea. You know, Gore-Tex is probably one of their most popular products over there at W.L. Gore. And guess what? Gore-Tex has so many uses. It's not funny. And it's all from this team-driven holacracy kind of, okay, we'll be patient. We'll wait till you develop this amazing idea. And when it works, we'll test it. We'll see where we can place it. We can apply it. And I'll tell you, the most progressive thing they're getting ready to do is they're going to start making airplanes and ships out of this Gore-Tex material by weaving the hull of the airplane out of this fabric. And when it crashes, it doesn't destroy the ship. It bounces, basically.
You're kidding.
No, I'm not.
Oh, wow.
So holacracy is really meant for breakthrough ideas, but there's no structure there. So you need a business in place that's already providing cash flow on a day-to-day basis, because you're going to burn through cash till you find that first billion-dollar idea. When you find the billion-dollar idea, boom, you implement it as quickly as possible, and that starts feeding more holacracy, and it grows from there. So that's really my take on holacracy. You still need the basic structure there for the other part of the business, the cool part, you know, like they used to tell us when I was a creative director, you guys are having fun all day. You know, yeah, we are, but it's structured fun. It's very structured. When that clock hits 9 o'clock, I sip my coffee and I am instantly creative because I've trained myself to be.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, is this largely for millennials? Is there any place in this type of mentality or this type of group force for, you know, people who are not millennials?
You know, I know some of you are listening and you're saying this is crazy time. And you're right, Denise. Not everybody's going to fit into this kind of structure.
That would be my concern.
I've seen companies shift to a row business model, the results-only work environment. And in the old environment, if you came in early and you stayed late, your boss thought you were a hard worker. Remember that. You came in early and you stayed late. If you came in before the boss and you left after the boss, in their mind, you were a hard worker. Well, in a results-only work environment, you have to do your work to be judged. It doesn't matter when you come in. You can even play pool in some of these work environments, but you're judged on the work you get done. So guess what happens?
The results. It's results-based.
Right. So
but
guess
I
what?
Like that, actually.
All those players who were lying by showing up early and leaving late and looking the part, the spotlight is now on them, and they look like the dud that's been holding the company back all these years, and nobody figured it out because they looked like they were working. They weren't.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I know. Listen, I've been around people who just didn't want to go home.
Yeah.
For whatever reason.
It's going to scare the hell out of people who have learned to hide within the structure and the rules that we have come up with during the industrial age. And now you're going to be under a spotlight, which means you're going to have to work and you're going to have to make mistakes under the right guise or the right place of making mistakes. You may not know the software as well as you think you do, okay? Even though you've been using it since 1993, the software updates and upgrades you kept pace with, you're still making mistakes with. The millennial comes in and they actually help develop the software and they'll show you shortcuts. So it's a matter of being authentic, working hard, and guess what? You got to drop the ego because you're also going to get coached every day.
Right.
And that's an adult environment. And most people, believe it or not, when they sit there and they say, wow, we need managers here, what they really are saying is we need babysitters here because they can't trust their employees or control their employees. You must train your employees to the level that you can trust them to run the company their way and then let it get run properly.
Right.
Because they're going to create a company you never thought in your own brain was possible. That happened to me. I let them create the company they wanted. And, you know, $9 million in billing later, I figured out they knew what they were doing.
What took you so long?
Exactly.
So part of this conversation goes straight back to an earlier point, which is that two-way mentorship is very, very important. So if you're a boomer or you're a little bit older and you're in this kind of group of millennials and you're feeling, you know, you're getting your panties in a wad, to put it bluntly, don't do
nice.
That. Stop,
yeah.
Reassess, and actually have conversations with them. Find out where there's a learning flow that is working between you two, it's not a one-way street.
Right. Well, I'll give you a good example. I have a very good friend of mine, and I can't, you know, I'm not going to mention his name, but he's worked in this particular business sector his entire life since he was a child, and because his parents owned this business. And now he's on his own, and he's doing, video production, and I keep sitting there telling him, I go, look, and he's a boomer, excuse me, I say, things have changed dramatically. Your equipment has changed, the way you do business has changed, the way production has done has changed, and people are shifting from the large screen to the small screen. Most of the production companies in New York City and most of the visual effects houses are doing just TV work because everybody is moving to television. Hollywood is having trouble making a profit from movies now.
Because their movies suck.
Well, they suck, but millennials don't go to the movies. Millennials don't like to go to the movies, especially when it costs $80 to buy two tickets and popcorn and everything else. They price themselves out of the market. And so I told my friend this, and he goes, yeah, I know. Yeah, I know. And every time I talk to him about this stuff, he just keeps saying, yes, I know. And he goes right back to doing things the way he's been doing them for 35 years. He's hearing me, but he's not changing. He's listening, but he's not putting it into effect. And guess what's happening? His business financially is shrinking,
yeah.
And shrinking. And I keep seeing him do cheap stuff to get around it. Like he has storage units instead of a production house. He has he does his own drills and building and all this other stuff, and he keeps everything in his apartment, and he can barely live there. And it's because the whole business world is shrinking around him, and he's still clinging to the old methods. And what happened is, I mean, I don't know if anybody knows this, but you can outfit an iPhone phone with a bunch of video production add-ons, and they've actually filmed full documentaries for the big screen on iPhones that have won awards.
That I did know. Yeah, I did know that.
So the problem is when you show up, let's say you film videos for, let's say, a husband and wife getting married, you know, weddings and things like that. Everybody still, if you're going to charge $5,000 for a wedding, let's say, they still expect you to show up with this giant equipment because then they can go, oh, that justifies what I just, you know, paid for. The reality is you can do very high-definition filming off your iPad, but nobody's going to be happy if you show up with these tiny little pieces of equipment and a couple little mics and you walk around and you film everything. They still expect you to show up with this amazing equipment, and we don't really need that anymore. So there's one way the business is changing immensely. We even see reporters, roving reporters on the street. The average person can film their own, documentary from the street. You know, here we are live. Look what's happening. We have the production capabilities in our fingertips for every single person right now to do something of high quality and high value and just post it on YouTube. So think about your message that your business wants to get out. You can do it so easily for free. You just have to buy the equipment.
You know, I'm really glad you brought that up because, I mean, there are so many things that, and they change so, so quickly. I guess my question is, look, you know, I've been working on the Internet since 2000, and the Internet astonishes me every day. I mean, it's a growing, breathing, very much a live thing.
Yes,
and
it is.
I'm telling you, every day I'm like, whew, where did that come from? Oh, crap, that's outdated? Really?
Right.
I mean,
yes.
It's, every day is a learning process for me in my particular industries. I guess my question is, why, and I don't even know that you can answer this, Brad, but why do people keep clinging to just things that they can see are not working just by their spreadsheet or by their financials? What is the mentality behind that?
Well, we have to go back in history. That's why I always love history, because our grandparents, let's go back even further. Our great-great-grandparents would pass on their values to our great-grandparents, and they would pass on their values to your grandparents and then to your parents. And then we would pick up them, and we would tweak it a little bit, and we'd change it because society has changed. You know, we have elevators now, and we have cars, so we don't have to plan ahead and travel by steamship, and, you know, the pace has increased. But our assimilation and changing of knowledge doesn't shift from one generation so quickly unless something interferes with that. And what interfered with that is 1977, the movies changed, the technology in our fingertips changed, and our parenting style changed. And within one generation, you have a new set of young people who are now adults who don't think, behave, operate, romance, or pay in the same way that any generation before for the past 5,000 years. So this shift has emotionally jarred us because we're looking at this kid and we're saying, why the hell aren't you doing things my way? Well, you didn't raise him to do things your way. And you also let the public school system do stuff and teach him collaboration and all these other things.
Right.
And you let him go off and go to his bedroom. And when you punished him, he was on a video game. So
right.
All these factors, and you were sitting here emotionally going, well, this isn't working anymore. So we're clinging to what we know works, and you have a generation in front of us that is so comfortable in this invisible economy that we can't even see, but we don't know to ask them because we're looking at them and saying, they're a mini version of me. No, they're not. They just look like us when we were that young. But they're not. They think different. They do things differently. And if you want to get on the new bandwagon, you have to kind of listen to them because they have new ideas using new technology and all these other things. It'd be like if somebody came to me, if a boomer came to me tomorrow and said, I have this dream of opening a tie and watch company, a shop, a store where all I sell are ties and watches. And I say, good luck with that.
No
because, you know, because our hats, you know, I mean, I would sit there and say, well, if you're going to open that kind of store, go down to where the courthouses are or where the law offices are in your area, because those are the only people buying ties and watches. Okay. Even the Apple Watch is not selling like hotcakes because we don't care. It's nothing
innovative.
Well,
people have their phones, and people don't even really wear watches anymore.
Yeah,
I do because I like them, but I notice that most people, their phone is in their hand. They can tell what time it is.
Right, exactly. And, you know, as far I'm a Boy Scout, so for me, I don't like to have a GPS, and I don't like I like to biologically guess what time it is because that keeps me sharp. There's a certain part of a human being that should be aware of your surroundings. Yes,
yep.
Exactly.
I have a great internal clock. I can wake up at any. I wake up all night long. I cat nap. Mm-hmm. I don't really sleep a whole lot. I have been playing this guessing game with myself since I was old enough to tell time, and I will open my eyes and go, I think it's 3:18, and I'll look at the clock, and it, you know, I'm 5 minutes one way or another. I'm never more than that. I always know what time it is.
Yeah, I'm the same way. And my dad and I used to play this game called Guess the Temperature, Guess the Weather. And I can, to this day, go outside, tell you what temperature it is within 2 degrees, and then tell you it's going to storm later. And my wife is astounded that I can do that. And I said, well, you know, I studied meteorology for a semester in high school, and my dad was always telling me to pay attention. Common sense, you know, that's what this is. And we've lost touch with that. So, you know, if anybody is emotionally, like, listening to this and going, you know, this generation, they need to be paddled and trained just like we were trained, and they
too
need
late.
To get back in line, it's too late, folks. You let the cat out of the bag. You raise the kid to be, everyone's a prodigy. Everyone's a genius. And now you got to deal with that. You got to manage it now. You got to listen to it. Because on some level, those people who believe they're a genius will prove you to be right. They are a genius. But you got to be able to see them with new eyes and new ideologies and new, you know, it's what's that saying? I think it's Proust said it. You know, the voyage of discovery is not by seeing new lands or discovering new lands, but by seeing things with new eyes. And I think that's the most important part right now that we need to learn. You have to see things with new eyes, because we raise this generation to be mavericks, to turn their backs on the corporate world, because we were betrayed by the corporate world and we were betrayed by government. So they may sound confused when they stand in Wall Street and complain about the 1%, but the reality is we raise them to turn their back on all this and be more human, to care about individuals, to give a damn. And they will show their might in their buying power. And that's just the way they are.
Right, right. And honestly, you have, I mean, just listening to you, and I know I've said this before, but I didn't view them as anything other than kind of an irritation. I mean,
yes.
I hate tech speak. I hate it. I think it's just lazy, but, you know.
LOL.
I'm a grammar Nazi. No, I'm a grammar Nazi. I admit it. But then I, you know, I have to realize after speaking with you and listening to you and reading a lot of your work that they are very different from us. Their brains are wired differently. I had no clue. I guess if I'd sat down and kind of, you know, done a walk back through, you know, all the just the toys and the influences that these kids were being brought up with or not being. Honestly, I think some of them were raised by wolves. I mean, they're just kind of thrown out there. And they're kind of
ROTLMFAO, right? Rolling on the floor. Yeah.
Well, and, you know, that goes back to the story, and I know we're still broadcasting. Do you have a moment? I mean, do you have a
yes, go ahead. We'll continue this as long as people
recording.
Are willing to listen. As long as people are willing
recording.
To listen, I'm willing to talk. You know, there's a great do you remember the movie with Sidney Greenstreet and Humphrey Bogart, Across the Pacific? There's a great scene where Sidney Greenstreet says, "Sit down, make yourself comfortable. I love listening to a man who loves to hear himself talk." You know, so I'm willing to talk as long as people are willing to listen. So
I won't keep you long. But listen, I was thinking about you when I was in the grocery store a week or two ago, and this kid. You know, I'm not a big grocery shopper. I'm not a shopper. I don't like chocolate. I don't eat sweets, and I hate shopping. I am a girl. I promise.
Yeah.
But I just don't like shopping. So when I go into the grocery store or Walmart, I've got a list. I've already mapped out in my head what aisles I'm going down. I know where the stuff is. I'm in. I'm out. That didn't happen. And it happened because of this young kid. I wanted, you know, the little coupon ad said, okay, you can buy these personal watermelons. I didn't know what that was, but I wanted one. I wanted two. They were $1.99. So I stopped this young man. He's tall. He's good looking. You know, he's got this healthy mop of hair. I don't think anybody was home. I really don't. And I asked him, I said, you know, do you know where these small watermelons are? He worked in the produce section. Brad, he honest to God scratched his head.
You're not kidding. Making
it up. He scratched his head. And he said, no, I don't know where they are. Are they over there? And I said, no, I already looked over there. That's why I'm asking you. And I'm really trying to be polite because I do get impatient with what this is a character flaw, but what I, you know, consider rampant stupidity. But I heard you in my head, so I was trying to be patient.
There you go.
Honest to goodness, this poor kid, I had a couple of interactions with him, and finally I just gave up. I said, okay, thanks, I'll go find him. I get to the checkout stand, and because there was nobody else around, I said, okay, you know, to the checker, where can I find these? Well, she, as an older woman, said, I'll help you find them. I mean, you know, that's her job.
Right.
And between her and another lady in another checkout stand behind me, we wanted four of these watermelons. They call the kid. He comes ambling up in slow motion. All four of us, you know, the four women, we just kind of turned around and watched him because we wanted to see if he was going to actually make it without falling down. I'm not kidding. I mean, it was just,
yeah.
It was
almost
surreal. So the checker, my checker asked him, do you know anything about these watermelons? Oh, somebody asked me about those earlier. Now, I'm standing right there. He didn't recognize me.
Yeah.
I'm hard to miss. I'm tall. I've got dark hair. I've got very white skin. I'm considered very attractive, I'm told. I'm kind of hard to miss. He didn't recognize me. And I'm only saying that because he should have noticed it was me. So then the other woman, the other customer says, well, I would like two of them too. Brad, bless his heart, he goes back to the produce section way back in the store. He comes out with a watermelon. One.
For
one,
all of us.
Just one.
I'll chop this up for you.
We wanted four. So I looked at him and I said, you know, we wanted four. He goes, oh, you didn't tell me that.
Jeez Louise.
Yeah. Well, when I say he's a lost ball in the high grass, I promise you he's going to get fired many, many, many times.
Oh, they're not going to fire him. And you know why?
Why?
They're not going to fire him. You can't find anybody who's willing to work for $7.50 an hour. So they're not going to let him go. They're just going to manage him. You're going to see more of this. I'm going to throw this out.
Some guidance.
There you go. Well, I'm going to throw this out, and I'm going to give you some homework as well before we leave for this third and final installment, and that is this.
Don't know if this is the final one. I'm going to go over my show notes. We may be doing this again.
Maybe doing a fourth. Okay. Here's what happened. The guy who kind of came up with the idea for what's called ADD and ADHD, you know, attention deficit disorder.
Right.
Supposedly, I don't know if this is conspiracy theory or not, but on his deathbed, he said he made it all up. There's no such thing. And
I don't doubt that.
And a lot of these kids have been, who are on Ritalin and Paxil and all these other SSRI drugs that help them maintain their mood, they've never had the test to see if they really do have a brain disorder. They've just been analyzed by questions, and the teachers on the front lines have actually started the diagnostic process. And part of it is because these schools get money for every kid they have on a drug.
Mm.
So what you are experiencing, what you are experiencing, and my father taught me this because I was an artist and I was always with my head in the clouds. My father knew immediately I had an undisciplined mind. And what he did is he began the process when I was little.
That's not a bad thing. I mean, that's not the
discipline,
same as having a diseased mind.
Right. To discipline my mind. And what we have, and this is all over the world, we have minds that have been disciplined by video games. They are iterative in their attention span. They jump from one thing to the next. And it isn't the fault of the millennial. It's that we listen to these PhDs at the top that said we have to be more concerned about a child's self-esteem. So you don't paddle them. You don't say use your common sense and smack them in the back of the head. Now, I'm not saying that was a good way either, okay? But we got away from the discipline of the mind, which if you look in Japanese or Chinese culture, this is the number one thing they're taught, and that's why they're less violent and less emotionally into outbursts in those cultures. So it's the disciplined mind that we've lost touch with, reading books that we don't necessarily like, but we must learn the subject. Things like this are necessary for our growth and our expansion and the raising of our IQ. Now, with that said, I'm going to give three pieces of homework. And these are movies, so
all
they'll
right.
be easy. These are easy, okay? And I want everybody to go out and try and watch these movies. Now that our TV shows and movies. Now that you know everything that we've talked about here on the show, and you know about millennials, I want you to go back and watch the TV show, and you can find this on YouTube, Land of the Lost. And the reason I'm going to ask you to go watch this is because if just ignore the hokey special effects, but watch the complexity of the half-hour plot and ask yourself as you watch two or three of these episodes if a young person today could grasp any of this. Okay.
Okay, I wrote that down.
Land of the Lost, especially there's one about time travel or time vortexes. They were talking about the overlapping of time within this Land of the Lost and how that structure might look if it happened. This was a popular show. I think it was on like 3-4 years, only on Saturdays. And this is the kind of things we were exposed to as boomers, as cusp boomers, complexity and things like that. Well, all of a sudden, the comic code came along in the 70s and said, you can't you know, expose children to this kind of stuff. It's too much for their little minds to absorb. And they began to dumb down the comics and the cartoons and all these other things. You know, Batman no longer could fight, you know, police corruption. Batman had to fight weird criminals, you know, nothing in the real world was ever, the kids were never exposed to something in the real world anymore. And so the complexity that we enjoyed in the 70s as, you know, certain ideas started to come into fruition, like going to space and living on the moon, and what would that look like, you know, Space 1999 or UFO or Doctor Who. These things were relegated or delegated by PhDs who said this was too much for children. So now we have children watching SpongeBob SquarePants and things that don't challenge them anymore. And they tried so hard to slip education into cartoons that kids rejected it. Remember, school is work for children. When they come home, they want to enjoy their television just like we do. They want to have to work while they watch. But shows like Land of the Lost had such complexity in it, and it was clearly a good show because it was on for more than 2-3 seasons. So this was a show that was popular. Watch the old Star Trek cartoons and see how incredibly complex and deep these shows are. We have lost some of that complexity and intelligence in our basic structure in nowadays. The second piece of homework, and these are two movies I want you to watch. The one is called Idiocracy. Now, this movie is intended to be a comedy, and many of you will think it's a horrible movie, but I want you to watch it and ask yourself, how close to this dystopia are we living? I don't know
if you've
seen it.
Was that with Michael Keaton?
No, this one, Idiocracy, is with, I forget, the it's one of the brothers, Owen Wilson's brother. He's in it.
Yeah, I can't remember.
And basically he's a guy who lost his girlfriend, and he decides to sign up for a military experiment where they freeze him and they're going to thaw him out in the future. And I guess the machinery malfunctions and he wakes up like 1,000 years from now.
Okay.
And the whole society is dumbed down. All they do all day is watch television, and they drink Gatorade, and there's nothing but a famine all around the world because they've been taught that Gatorade is how you water crops. So the crops are always dying. They don't know what to do. So it turns out Owen Wilson's, I forget his brother's name. But,
Luke Wilson. Yeah,
yeah, Luke Wilson.
I just looked it up.
Mm-hmm. It turns out he is the smartest man on earth. And they elect the president. They elected him. He's a wrestler, and he's always talking in these, you know, loud, like, "Yeah, we're gonna do this," you know, like he's on a wrestling video. And when you're you have to be punished for a crime, you have to do battle in an arena in a car. You know, it's just. And I want you to. I used to watch the movie the first time I saw it. I said, "This is a horrible movie." But I couldn't take my eyes off the screen because we aren't that far away from how they've educated the population and maybe perhaps dumbed down the curriculum to make people happy.
And see, that is my biggest fear about what is going on right now. I mean,
right.
It honestly is. If you want to scare me, let's talk about education in America right now.
Right. So I want you to watch Idiocracy, and then I want you to look at Common Core and tell me how close we are to getting to that. And the third and final installment of this is I want you to go get the movie with George Clooney called Up in the Air. And if there isn't, I think it's the movie that explains the tension and the reality between millennials and boomers more than anything else. And it comes up with a great solution at the end. And I think this, I'd like to leave you on that because that movie is the movie I recommend to millennials because millennials do not really understand why we're making such a big deal out of them. They don't really understand how different they are. And they're kind of upset that people still are running around going, millennials are this and millennials are that. They kind of want to just be left alone. But they themselves may not know how different they are because we never sat them down and told them why they're so different.
And well, we're just figuring it out ourselves.
Right, and I think this is a movie the family can watch. If you have adult millennials in your life sit them down and watch this movie.
I try not to have any millennials around me.
I have a I raised my nephew, and he's 23 now, and we spend a lot of time together because we work out at the dojo together. We're both black belts, and he's my instructor, even though he's younger than me. And I get to listen to him, and he has a very different way of seeing the world, and he's highly educated. He speaks three languages fluently, and he's in the top 5% in the United States when he graduated from high school. And now that he's just graduated from college, he's just looking around for his first real job. And this young man, if I want to know the truth about what's really going on, I just ask him, and you'd be shocked. So I think it's important that we help educate them as to how and why they are so different. But at the same time, you know, you may ignore this in the corporate world. You may ignore this if you're a teacher in the academia. I mean, you have to work with it every day. But if you're a parent, you're probably really in dire need of understanding this next generation.
That is exactly the conversation I was having with the office manager at my dentist's office. She has a 13-year-old, and she kept saying, she's just so different. You know, when I have to get her attention, she has to literally reach out and almost tap her on the head and say, look at me, look at me, look at me.
Yes.
And
well,
it's
driving her crazy. Their reality is in everything else. By the way, I'm going to give you one more piece of homework. And this is going way off the beaten path. And for those of you who are into spiritual stuff or New Age stuff, this might explain some of it. I don't know if I completely believe in it 100%, but look up the term indigo child and crystal kid.
I came across that a week or so ago. Was that on your blog that I was reading?
Yes, I think maybe it was. But
okay. The
crystal indigo kids and crystal kids. Somewhere back in the 70s, I don't know who these people were, but they said that they started to notice that people, young babies all over the world, were being born with blue auras, light blue auras, every one of them. For those people who can see auras, I don't know if any of this is true or real. I'm just putting it out there for you for your education purposes. You can look it up on your own. What happened is they started to realize that as time went on, these children being born, their auras were lighting, they were giving a different tone, and they were turning into crystals, colored, meaning a pure bluish-white light. And what they started to notice was a pattern. And this pattern was they usually had big, round, light-colored eyes. They had psychic abilities, intuition. They were artistic and creative, and they didn't listen or obey any of the rules that they were told to obey by their parents, our society. And they actually just, they were viewed at first as autistic, antisocial, whatever. But they always liked to hang around with each other. And whenever I run into a crystal kid or an indigo kid, you know, what that term, whatever that means, when we make eye contact, they know immediately I understand them. And it's very strange, but they will walk up to me, and the parent will look at me and go, holy crap, he hates everybody. What is it with you? It's because I understand the next generation.
All right.
And they're out there. You can dismiss it. You can make fun of it. But there are people who believe in this 100%. And some of these kids are doing work that makes you scared because it's like you're watching children from the future. And I know it sounds weird, and I know it sounds like...
It really doesn't. I mean, there are so many... We are complex. I mean, we, as humans, we are incredibly complex.
Right.
And, you know, I don't have any problem looking at this and going, I don't know that I would give total credence to it, but I'm not going to dismiss it out of hand.
Yeah, I don't give it 100% credence, but there is a DNA shift that's taking place. You can ask around any scientists out there. There's a shift in thinking, a shift in the way we look at things. Quantum physics is now becoming mainstream. We are thinking differently. Technology is moving differently. We are going to shift into robots and bioorganic circuitry. We're going to be able to save more data in a gel pack than we were on a copper, motherboard. We are going to be shifting into things that are going to make us leap forward so fast we may not emotionally be prepared for it. And I hope everybody's ready.
Oh, well, all we can do is hang on for the ride.
Yeah, that's it. I thank you, by the way, Denise. This has been a lot of fun. And
it
those
has.
Of you who listen,
I mean, I'm fascinated. I mean, we're a half hour over, and I still don't want to let you go, but I have to. Honestly, we may have to do this another time, seriously, because I have show notes.
Yeah,
from the other ones, and there are things that I'm looking at them going, we didn't cover that, we didn't cover that. Oh, geez. You know, so we may.
Well, I'll tell you what. Here's how we're going to handle this. If you want me to come back for a fourth show, what I need for you to do is, as soon as you hang up here, if you have a little bit of time, write down what we didn't cover. Just make a couple of notes and send them over to me by email, and I will make sure I dedicate the next show to all of that. We'll kick it up a notch.
That's a deal. The thing is, it's so fascinating. We can get off on tangents. And it's hard to kind of go back to like, okay, Brad, I wanted to ask you this, you know, that whole, robotic type of thing. But, I mean, I find these shows with you are just, they're pleasurable. I learn so much. And honestly, truly, honestly, I thank you because now I am looking at these very young people with completely different eyes and a bit more compassion than I did in the past. And I give you full credit for that, and I'm very grateful for that.
And thank you. I appreciate that. I really don't like to come on a show. I mean, a lot of authors and coaches and things like that, they try to sell you a bunch of nonsense. I feel this information is so powerful and so necessary to prepare us for the next 25 years that I'd rather talk about this than anything else, because this will be impacting everything from government to parenting to academia to how we get along with everybody on planet Earth. And this huge shift where there's a lot of resistance because people are making so much money from us not moving forward. And the millennials are going to bring that change about.
You know, I'm fascinated by watching it now. Before, I was irritated. I mean, I really was. Like, really, spell. For crying out loud, spell. Show up on time. You know, don't be so arrogant. And now I'm going, that's interesting. So it's a whole shift in consciousness for me. And I hope for
like
the audience as well.
Well, why do we have to be on time? I mean, really, honestly.
Yes.
My wife gets on my case sometimes because even on my day off, I'm like, I have to be on time. I have to be on time. She goes, we don't have to be anywhere in a hurry. Just relax. Let's enjoy the ride. And she's right. Okay, I get there 5 minutes late on my day off. For God's sake, I need to lighten up is what you mean.
Yeah, exactly right. Well, listen, Brad, I thank you, you know, so much for being with me here today. And you've been a fantastic guest 3 times and hopefully a 4th. And honestly, I have learned so much from you. And I know our audience has as well. Look, when I'm out and about, I'm talking about this show. I'm in the dentist for crying out loud. And I'm going, okay, you've got to listen to this show. So
that's funny.
It has really been
so
impactful.
Funny.
I know. So anyway, everybody, the show will be available for download, in about an hour. And you can also find us in iTunes. Just type in our names, Denise Griffiths and Brad Zolas. And Brad, tell everybody very quickly before we go where they can find you on the Internet.
Yes, do www.liquidleadership.com, and you'll find me at my blog, and that'll show you how to spell my last name, and you'll be able to go from there. And please send me an email if you enjoyed the show. Send it to brad@liquidleadership.com, and we can start a dialogue. And I've helped a lot of people, parents, believe it or not, come up to me after I do keynote speeches for big Fortune 500 companies, telling them about the generational divide and how to manage people in that. I've had more parents come up to me after I get off stage, Denise, than anything else. Executives, grandmothers, they come up to me and they say, I now understand why my 4-year-old granddaughter wants an iPhone instead of a Barbie doll.
Right. When I was talking with this gal at the dentist office, she kept saying, because I was explaining to her, I was paraphrasing some of your comments, that, you know, their brains are wired very differently. She said, I never thought of that. I mean, her jaw dropped literally. At one point, she was so funny. She looked at me and she put her finger underneath her chin and she pushed her mouth back up. She was, I'm sorry, my mouth is hanging open. Her jaw literally dropped. So it's a fascinating topic. Well, everybody, thank you again. Have a safe Memorial weekend. I know it's a high traffic weekend. It's a high traffic fatality weekend. For God's sake, don't drink and drive. So just everybody stay safe. Stay safe. Brad, thank you.
Thank you so much.
You
thank you, Denise. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
On web.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on your Partner in Success Radio.